our next guest. He is Matt Harmon from Yahoo Sports, talking a little NFL Week 2. He joins us here on the program, Sportsnet 650 Vancouver. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing well. It's man, what a news-heavy day. Just one, less than 24 hours after the game's finish on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Two big quarterback injury news. We have the news about Jalen Ramsey requesting a trade. I mean, the NFL never gives us things to stop talking about, that's for sure.
Yeah, not to mention the terrific SI article that came out from Robert Klemko about Antonio Brown. Yep. It's got everybody talking. And, Jalen Ramsey, like you said. Let's start with Roethlisberger. Because he's out, they're banged up. There's no Le'Veon anymore. There's no Antonio Brown. This is a new look Steelers team that I don't know. Are they destined now to just bottom out? What do you think?
Well, I mean, and here's the thing. Let's be real about where the Steelers were even going into Week Two, or even I would say before Roethlisberger went down in Week Two. You can't use the backup quarterback excuse for what happened on Sunday. This team did not move the ball once again, and this was in Pittsburgh against the Seattle team that got toasted by Andy Dalton and the Bengals in Week One. You could certainly say, okay, Week One, the Steelers, they kind of always lay an egg against the Patriots. Bill Belichick certainly seems to have their number. He knows how to rip them up defensively. They never adjust. Offensively, they have their slow moments. However, there was really no excuse for the way this team was not moving the ball in Week Two. And I think, maybe that doesn't come down to Roethlisberger. I think the bigger issue is that this team really lacks playmakers. I mean, there is plenty wrong with Antonio Brown, right? But what you can't say about him is that he's one of the best receivers to ever play the game. He is a legitimate coverage dictator, which, he dictates what the defense is going to do and then opens up opportunities for other players. They don't have anybody that really commands that respect at this point right now. They are lacking playmakers. Juju Smith-Schuster hasn't really stepped up into that number one receiver role where he's giving opportunities to other players. Dante Moncrief is just kind of wasting space out there. And James Conner has been banged up, and he's only just a running back. So they were in trouble even before this Roethlisberger injury, and it's not like they're dropping Mason Rudolph into an offense that's humming. They're dropping Mason Rudolph into an offense that has a lot of questions to answer.
Yeah, to me, Dante Moncrief is the bigger problem here. Juju, he is drawing coverage. They have shied away from him to see if they can establish as a two or three receiver. They just haven't found that guy yet. On the other side of the football, the Seattle Seahawks go on the road, a game many had them pegged to lose because of Pittsburgh being mad, being at home, not wanting to start 0-2, and the Seahawks' tradition of traveling cross-country and not looking great in Week 1, perhaps hurting them. Russell Wilson doesn't have the same big numbers that some of the other guys do through 2 weeks, but other than Tom Brady, Matt, how many guys would you rate ahead of Russell Wilson as far as winners, best winners in the game?
I mean, best winners, that's the thing. This quarterback injury wave that we're seeing right now, and even let's throw Cam Newton into this discussion too, because he's not currently injured. He's going to be playing on Sunday, but I think there might be something going on there. He looks like he's reaching kind of an inflection point in his career, whether he's on the back nine or not. We're seeing this next wave of quarterbacks come up right as we're seeing this kind of old guard finally start to go away. So I mean, you could have put Roethlisberger or Breeze up there, but yeah, in terms of right now, like Brady, Wilson, those guys are kind of the quintessential, elite quarterbacks that everything else doesn't have to be perfect around them. I think it is more stark than ever seeing the guys who are legitimate elite quarterbacks because they make everything else around them kind of, not as important. Your defense is bad, like in Kansas City. Your defense has holes. Who cares? You have Patrick Mahomes. Tyreek Hill goes down. Who cares? You have Patrick Mahomes. Like he goes and elevates a DeMarcus Robinson. And Russell Wilson has been doing that for years. It seems like 100 years ago that we were having a discussion of like, who is Russell Wilson without Marshawn Lynch? Who is Russell Wilson without this defense? I think we've seen, especially over the last 2 years, hey, Russell Wilson is a guy who elevates his talent around him. And, there was a lot of question marks entering this offseason, in terms of who is going to be the other pass-catching threat along with Tyler Lockett. I think Lockett has stepped up pretty nicely into that number one role, especially, running more routes out of the slot. But, Russell Wilson's making DK Metcalf happen, so he's making Will Disley happen. And I think that just goes to show you what kind of player Russell Wilson is. And as long as it doesn't matter what's going on the rest of the roster, their defense, isn't quite where it's definitely not where it used to be. It's not quite even, I would say, an average unit. Their offensive line has looked problematic for the first 2 weeks. It doesn't matter. They have Russell Wilson. So he's certainly right up there with a guy like Brady in that regard in terms of true, you know, elevating player behind center.
Matt Harmon of Yahoo Sports joining us, talking some NFL. It's the program, Walker and Rintoul, Sportsnet 650. Dak Prescott, how much of a comparable is he to Russell Wilson when you look at career trajectory?
I mean, I think that you're seeing Dak take that next step, right? We just discussed with Russell Wilson, there was the moment where he became, you know, the truck, not the trailer. And I think that we're seeing that right now with Dak. And oftentimes all it takes is a coach who's going to make the quarterback's life easier. I would actually argue that Russell maybe has never had that in his career. I don't know that Brian Schottenheimer is that guy. I don't know that Daryl Bevel was that guy before him. But we're clearly seeing, look, I do not think it is – I don't know if it's possible to overstate the difference between what we're seeing out of Dallas now versus what we were seeing out of Dallas a calendar year ago. Think about back in the 2018 season, the start of that, we're seeing Scott Linehan run a prehistoric offense that should have been left back in the mid-2000s. We are seeing, you know, a receiver core that is just bereft of talent. Now, Kellen Moore is designing a modern offense, making Dak Prescott's life easier with play action, with vertical throws up the middle of the field, you know, running a lot of tempo, running some motion with these plays, you know, taking the old plays but just dressing them up a little bit. You're seeing a pass-catching core that, okay, Michael Gallup is starting to break out. He goes down. That's all right. We have Devin Smith as, like, just another icing on the cake. We have Randall Cobb and Jason Witten looking like they turned the clock back at least, you know, a year and a half or so. They're filling valuable roles. This offense is radically different than what it was a year ago, and that has really shown you what Dak can do on his own accord.
The Buffalo Bills, Matt, have looked pretty good through 2 weeks. Josh Allen has as well. We knew the D was good. John Brown's been terrific. Is this a team that you're buying is for real in the AFC?
I think so, because I believe in their brass, right? Like, I think Sean McDermott is a good coach. I think Brandon Bean has done a good job assimilating a roster there that you know, is balanced. As you mentioned, their defense was legitimate. They started kind of building the back end and then coming up front, which is interesting because a lot of times, you know, traditional NFL wisdom would tell you, you know, you got to build that defensive line and then start accumulating the secondary, which is actually really, like, think about where Sean McDermott came from in Carolina. That was what they tried to do all those years, tried to cover up mistakes on the back end by having a good pass rush. McDermott's kind of done it the other way. You know, they have Tre'Davious White, they have some good safeties there, and now they're building up a front that has Ed Oliver, that has Jerry Hughes still playing well. You know, they brought Star Lutulele over. They draft a linebacker with a first-round pick. This unit is really taking the next step. And then the quarterback play, for all that you can say about Josh Allen, and look, it's not always pretty, but he is a big-time playmaker. I mean, from a fantasy perspective, what he does as a runner is really a difference maker. He has as much upside as any quarterback in fantasy because of that rushing ability. So I think you're seeing Buffalo be a team that, look, I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender, but I certainly think they can push for an AFC wildcard spot because they have clear defined strengths, and they have a quarterback who, again, is going to make some mistakes. But paired with John Brown, they have the ability to tilt any single week with big plays.
I know we're used to seeing the Patriots in the AFC title game. They're there every year. But the NFL, to me, has never really been formulaic when it comes to the playoffs. We get big moments, we get big games, we get big upsets. I don't know if I've had the feeling quite like, and maybe it's a recency bias thing, but when you look at the AFC right now, and you saw what the Patriots have done, you saw what Patrick Mahomes did again yesterday, it's really, really difficult to envision a world where we don't just see Kansas City and New England in that title game. Like, has it reached a point of predictability to you?
I think those two teams are far and ahead better than everybody else because I think, again, it comes back to quarterback play and also the coaching staff too. You know, Andy Reid and Bill Belichick are two of the top three, four, five coaches in the NFL, obviously with Bill Belichick being clearly at that number one spot. You know, they have a clearly defined system. They know who they are. They have an identity. They have a vision as an organization. They have organizational clarity, and they have an elite quarterback. Now, I don't know that any other AFC team really has that total package, but there are some teams that I think could give, you know, let's give it some time, especially Baltimore. And I know Lamar Jackson has played Arizona. I know he's played Detroit. But go and watch some of those throws, you know, especially that late game one to Hollywood Brown. I don't care if it's prime Darrell Revis. I don't care if it's prime Deion Sanders. That throw's unguardable. That's a perfect throw. Like, if Lamar Jackson can continue to play like that, and oh by the way, he's rushing for 120 yards on the ground on his own. If he can continue to play like that, then I think the Ravens have a shot to be that third best team in the AFC and push, you know, in a one game series in the playoffs, push a New England out, push a Kansas City out if they can play the game on their script. So there are some teams I'm interested in, but yeah, right now, if you had to ask me today, I think the AFC Championship game is going to be that rematch of what it was last year, which is Brady, Mahomes, and it just comes down to who's going to get that final point on the board.
Wasn't that long ago the Jacksonville Jaguars were in an AFC Championship game. The news of the day, Jalen Ramsey wanting out of Jacksonville. Everybody wants a player like that. Which contending team or team on the verge of being a contender needs Jalen Ramsey the most?
Yeah, I mean, needs Jalen Ramsey the most is one thing. It's just really tough to imagine a team wanting to give up premium draft capital. And then, by the way, you have to turn around and pay him $20-plus million. That's going to be a tough sell. I would think that a team like Seattle, you know, I don't know if it's within their organizational philosophy, but they have big problems on the back end. Trey Flowers has been a liability so far, especially he was in week one, gave up all eight of his targets for eight catches for 150 yards and a touchdown. You know, that's a guy that's a concern. And, you know, Jalen Ramsey could be the guy that takes them, you know, brings back a Richard Sherman-type presence, the number one corner that you leave on one side of the field and just absolutely blanks it. You know, the Raiders have said, or I remember Jalen Ramsey said he would love to play for the Raiders. I don't know if that's like what you say, like a contending team, but they have the money to spend and the draft capital to burn. So I think it's really tough to find a place that's going to have the cap flexibility that is a true contender. I mean, Kansas City, the Rams, those are all teams that you could think could use some secondary help, but are they going to want to flip a draft pick and a draft pick plus and then go around and pay him $20 million? So it's really tough to find a fit for him. But it, to me, the confusing part of this story is just, you know, how have you let it get to this point? How have you kind of chosen the side of a middling coach over a transcendent talent, in my opinion, on the defensive side of the ball? And it just makes me kind of question this whole Tom Coughlin operation. Like, what has this group really done together to warrant, you know, this type of thing? It's one thing for the Mike Tomlin-led Steelers to push out a Hall of Famer in Antonio Brown for all that was going on off the field. And this is a proven coaching staff that's won a Super Bowl. This Tom Coughlin experiment so far in Jacksonville, it's warranted a number four overall pick at running back that is looking like a huge whiff, especially given the context of what quarterbacks went after him in that draft. You know, they extended Blake Bortles. They have kind of collapsed. They gave a bunch of money to a veteran quarterback who's not currently playing for them. There's a lot of whiffs on this team's ledger right now. And that really, I think, has to raise an eyebrow when you see what's going on with Jalen Ramsey right now.
Yeah, and it wasn't long ago that this looked like almost a generational defense. And it's still a decent defense, but it's not carrying them like it did a couple years ago.
No, and I think that also goes back to organizational clarity, organizational structure. Like, you can't double down on the defense. Statistics, analytics would show you that defenses are volatile year to year. I mean, you can have a great defense. It's, like you said, it's still a very good defense, but to rely on defense year over year, especially when those contracts get beefy, that's tough because you're asking volatile statistics like scoring defense, sacks, turnovers to carry over year to year, and that just hasn't happened so far in Jacksonville, and it just shows you that they haven't been able to identify a counterpunch to the thing that they built their team on, and that's problematic. You know, if you nail the quarterback evaluation, you nail everything else, and I think the fact that Jacksonville doubled down on Blake Bortles and then hasn't been able to correct that in the draft. You know, and again, they chose a rotational pass rusher in Taven Bryan over Lamar Jackson. You can do all these things in hindsight, but it goes back to process, which is they never truly identified how to build a real team with a lot of clarity, and they relied on a unit that has been volatile to this point.
Given the events of the last 4 days, you tell me, if I tell you you have to bet your life savings on one of these teams to win the NFC South this year after 2 weeks, which team are you taking between Tampa Bay, Atlanta, New Orleans, and Carolina?
I mean, I'm glad that I don't have that much in life savings to bet on. But I, man, it's really tough. I mean, right now, if I had to say, I mean, I think it comes back to Carolina, because I think that if Cam Newton can figure this out, everything else has pretty much gone right for Carolina. Their defense looked really good against the Rams in week one, especially from a pass defense perspective. Christian McCaffrey is obviously a stud. I think we've seen what I was talking about all offseason, which is that this is the best set of supporting weapons that Cam Newton has ever had. With Curtis Samuel, he's really flashed, especially against the Bucs. I mean, he should have had 170 yards if Cam Newton was even a bit accurate. DJ Moore has turned into a really nice chain moving receiver. Greg Olsen played really well against the Buccaneers. There is a lot of talent on this pass catching group. The defense looks really good. And I think if one of the possible outcomes is that Cam Newton is just, you know, he's finding his groove early, because they took it so easy on him in the offseason. If that ends up being the answer to that question of what's wrong with Cam Newton, then I think the Panthers still have the best roster now that the Saints are without Drew Brees. Atlanta has too many holes to me, and I don't trust the Teddy Bridgewater experience down there in New Orleans.
Matt Harmon, Yahoo Sports. Good stuff. Enjoy the Monday Nighter, Matt.
Hey, it should be a good one. It's too bad, we're getting there's going to be so many mono jokes. It'll be nice to know that every football writer in America has kissed somebody back when they were in middle school. But it's very great we get that layup joke. But hopefully, It's a good bounce back game for Baker Mayfield of the Browns.
That's true. Neither of us have ever had mono for obvious reasons.
I did.
Hey, the ladies aren't big into sports talk. I don't know.
I can confirm.
See you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Matt Harmon, Yahoo Sports.